Reptiles and amphibians are fascinating to look at, and I think many of us, though, don't realize that they play an important role in the ecosystems where they live right here in Wisconsin. It's pretty amazing to think about how cold-blooded creatures like those can survive our Wisconsin winters. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're going to talk about that today with two guests. Rory Pulaski is one, a conservation biologist with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. She works with herps in general and has particular knowledge about Wisconsin reptiles. And Rory, great to have you with us.
Yeah,
thanks for coming back.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And Rich Staven is our other guest, zoologist in natural heritage conservation for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Rich, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, I'm really looking forward to talking with you about herps, about herptiles, I guess I should say, about our reptiles and amphibians. How many species of reptiles and amphibians do we have here in Wisconsin, Rory?
Well, I think it surprises a lot of people. We don't, you know, it's not a group of species that you see very often, but we have 19 amphibians, different species in Wisconsin, and we have 36 reptiles, so a total of 55 native species to the state.
I'd forgotten we had that many reptiles.
Yeah,
That's a lot. What are some, Rich, of the most common?
Yeah, Rory said some of them are hard to find, but there are some that are a lot easier to see or to hear. Some of the frogs that are commonly encountered, a lot of people might hear these in the springtime, like the spring peeper or the chorus frog. If you're near a wetland or some of them even breed in ditches, their calls can almost be deafening at times. There's so many of them and so loud. Later in the season, you might encounter green frogs. They're common in a variety of aquatic habitats. Their call is kind of unique. It sounds a lot like someone plucking a string on a banjo.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool. And we have several salamanders. Some of the more common ones are the blue-spotted salamander, which is common in forested habitats, and the tiger salamander, which is one of the larger ones. And it's found in a variety of habitats, including more open habitats and even in more urban areas. Some of the common snakes that we find are the common garter snake. That's one that we hear about a lot. A lot of people see those. It's kind of a black, dark color with a yellow or white stripe on the top or the back, and then a couple lateral stripes down the side. And
cute little guys.
Yeah, for people that like snakes, I guess. And a couple of really common turtles are the snapping turtle. Many people see those on roadsides. I think some people have said that you could probably go to any water body in Wisconsin and find a snapping turtle in there. So you can imagine how common they might be. And the painted turtle, which are in wetlands and along streams and water bodies, and they seem to assemble in large numbers as well, and very pretty turtle.
Ah, they are. You mentioned frogs, and Judith, bless her heart, went online and found us some frog sounds, and I thought, you know, before we take some calls, and by the way, you can join in if you have a question or comment. I hope you'll join us. Are you a lover of herps, of frogs, or reptiles, or amphibians? Have you ever taken part in a Wisconsin frog and toad survey? We want to talk about that for sure today, too. Encounters that you've had, give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our program Facebook page, title of which is The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Well, we've got some songs from frogs, and frankly, my favorites are in here. So Judith picked some of the ones that I really like. So here's one. Well, you'll never guess what that was. these two characters know what that is, a bullfrog, and that's one of my. I love to hear the bullfrog in the summer.
That was pretty cool because there was a whippoorwill calling in the background too. I don't know if you picked that up.
I did, and will that bullfrog sound change as the year goes on or as the season goes on?
The call remains.
The sound?
Yeah, it remains pretty much the same throughout the year. So each individual has a little bit different call. Sometimes you can differentiate it, but yeah, the call remains the same.
Here's another good one. I like that one. I wonder, as you're listening here, do you know what that frog was? That frog sound? You're thinking as you're listening. Well, let's turn to Rory. What was that, Rory?
Yeah, so this was a leopard frog, which is a little bit rare in Wisconsin, but it's a common species in some of the prairie areas. One of the unique things about this species is that they can travel up to a mile, even 2 miles away from water to forage, to eat in the summertime.
Yeah, and we really, that's a song I don't hear as much.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately. Wood. Kind of takes you right to a swamp or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the wood frog. And what's that? What? Tell us about the wood frog.
Yeah, the wood frog is interesting because it's one of the first frogs to start calling in the springtime. Yeah. And a lot of times it can be overpowered by some of the spring peepers and chorus frogs, so it gets drowned out and you don't hear it. But if you get out there early in the season, you should be able to hear wood frogs.
And one more. And this one, I really like hearing this one because of what it represents. Mr. and Mrs. Spring Peeper. And I love spring peepers because when you're hearing them, you know that spring is here. Spring is here. Oh, and they're a fun little animal, aren't they?
Yeah, it's amazing for how small they are. I mean, they're only as big as like your fingernail.
Yeah.
And they can produce that amount of sound is really phenomenal.
Yeah, it's and there's got to be millions of them out there.
And they're one of the most common species I think that people hear, and they're deafening. If you hear hundreds, even dozens of them, they're really loud.
Well, we might go back to some of those sounds later on as we move along, but Lyman and McFarland's been waiting a long time. Lyman, thanks for waiting. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi there. This spring I was walking on this toward this prairie area right here in McFarland, and as I approached it, there were garter snakes coming out of a hole in somebody's backyard at the edge of the prairie, and there were lots of them. And I was worried because the prairie had just been burned by the village a few days before, so I actually collected about a dozen of them and brought them into the woods because there was nothing for them to eat or hide in. Anyway, as the days went on, they just kept coming out, and there just had to be hundreds and hundreds of them just coming out of that same hole. And the question I have is, how in the world can that many snakes find their way to one place? I mean, is it pheromones or what? Because it's not like they're birds that can navigate. So what does your guest have to say about that?
That's a very good question. And it's, we were going to talk about how do they spend their winters. And Rory?
Yeah, the garter snake is one of the species in Wisconsin that's known to communally hibernate. Some of our snake species will hibernate over individually throughout the winter in a small mammal burrow, crayfish burrow. The garter snakes, as the caller mentioned, they'll hibernate communally, sometimes up to hundreds of snakes in an area, and they do use scent trails to follow each other to get back to the same hibernacula each year. So to some people, it might not be an interesting thing to see, but for someone that's interested in snakes, it's a pretty interesting experience to get to come across one of these. It's not too common that you'll see one of these, and you have to hit it at the right time in the spring or even the fall when everything's leaving or emerging at the same time.
And Lyman, what was the location like? Was it a...
Well, it was just on the edge of a lawn in this person's backyard, right by the okay. sidewalk. You know, not secluded at all.
Oh, okay. Well, my question was going to be, where do we usually find them doing that?
Yeah, they really can be anywhere. You know, we have people that live in the middle of Madison that have, you know, an old well, and they'll use that as their hibernacula. They can be in, you know, really pristine habitats way away from civilization too. Old foundations of houses are good a lot of times. There's a lot of cracks and crevices. They can get into those too.
That's really interesting. Lyman, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Sure. And Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Let's go there. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show. In fact, I'm out at our hunting shack at Pittsville now, and there's a lot of marshes around here, and I don't hear any spring peepers.
No, you probably wouldn't today.
But a little story. This happened several years ago at our daughter's. They lived on the cranberry farm, bog area out toward Babcock. And one spring, a nice little painted turtle come crawling up in their yard and dug a hole right along the sidewalk and laid its eggs. And, of course, they marked it, watched it, watched it, and nothing happened. Nothing happened all summer. And that winter, the ground froze like it does where you shovel the snow off. And the following spring, the grandkids decided they would find out what happened to those eggs. And it was a little later in the spring, starting to get warm, and they dug them up, and they were hatched out, and they were little frogs, or little turtles. And they put them in a pen, and they fed them for a while, and they painted some marks on them to identify them and took them out and let them go in a pond, and they all swam away. There must have been five or six or seven somewhere in there. And I don't believe they ever saw them again, but I was amazed that those turtle eggs could spend the winter underground and not hatch out until the following spring. Would that be common?
Hmm. What about it, Rich?
Yeah, we have several turtles that there's a couple of different strategies. Some will actually hatch out in the fall as hatchlings and then find their way to their overwintering area. But then there's other species like the painted turtle that will stay as eggs and as young through the winter time and then emerge in the spring. It's really interesting to see these different strategies and how different turtles will make it through the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling, Dave. Appreciate it. Talking about Wisconsin herptiles, getting ready, those snakes and reptiles and amphibians getting ready for winter, with our two guests, Rory Pulaski and Rich Stafen from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little bit later on in the show, we are going to be talking about wetlands here in the state and zeroing in on the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and what they do to protect our wetlands. And certainly now, as we visit about reptiles and amphibians, many of them use our wetlands as well. So it's great to be to have a program that combines both. Today, Rory Pulaski and Rich Stafen, our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Bob in Green Bay has a question for you guys. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the show. I think those critters are really cool. I have a question for you, please. We have rattlers here and water moccasins, I believe. And is a water moccasin an amphibian? And I know they spend most of their time in the water, but I'm just wondering where they hole up during the winter.
Okay, now, Bob, you're in Green Bay, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't think you're going to find a water moccasin in Green Bay area, Rory.
No, we have water moccasins. They aren't an amphibian. They're a species of snake, and they're found in states more southern to Wisconsin. So what typically people are seeing in Wisconsin, I'm guessing you probably have, are northern water snakes. They look fairly similar. They can get to be pretty large, 4 to 5 feet even, and their markings are pretty similar. And they are a fairly aggressive snake. They're not a venomous snake. one of the differences I get asked a lot about, you know, venomous versus poisonous snakes, are rattlesnakes are actually, or any of the poisonous snakes are actually venomous. Poisonous snakes would be a type of snake that you couldn't eat, and people eat rattlesnake meat. That's fine to eat. So the difference between poisonous and venomous is that venomous would apply to all snakes, that they're able to inject their venom in, into a human, into a mammal that they bite. So we don't... unless there was an escaped pet that someone had in your neighborhood, in the Green Bay area, we don't have any historic records of any venomous rattlesnakes or water moccasins.
Okay. But the, certainly you, it would be easy to see how you could mistake one of the water snakes for
They do look very similar. Yep.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Ann in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I love this program. I've been waiting to talk to you guys. About a year ago, September, I came across on Sparta Norwalk Bike Trail.
Yep.
It was, at first I thought it was a snake, and then I looked at the rest of the body when it moved, and it had the butt of a frog, the broad butt of a frog. It had four legs, two on each side. Then I noticed that it blinked, and I thought that snakes don't have eyelids. So I have, and it was like a creature from the swamp, and I've drawn the picture of it to so many people to see, and they've never heard of it. They think I'm fooling, and I've never seen it again, and I don't know what it is.
Well, tell you what, did it have kind of a tail?
No tail. It had the butt of a frog, a very blunt butt of a frog, and then like the frog legs, but there were two on each side. In the back, no front legs. The top half of the snake, or whatever, was like a snake, very thin and very feisty, but it blinked its eyes.
I thought maybe you're going to describe a slender glass lizard, and it sounds like you're in the right habitat for those.
Yeah, I thought it was a salamander, but they don't have four legs in the back. Don't they have two legs on each side of their body? And don't they have a tail?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But the tail could have been lost. I mean, they could have been a tailless, right? Rich?
Yeah. The lizards can lose their tails, absolutely.
That's why that's what came to my mind right away. I wondered if it was a lizard that lost its tail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like maybe the best option because, like you said, with the blinking, that would be the snakes can't blink, the lizards can.
Right. And when I was a kid, we had a lizard for a pet.
Yeah.
So I know what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a mystery, but the best guess, probably a type of lizard that lost its tail.
Yeah, we have four lizard species in the state. Mm-hmm. One is the legless lizard, the slender glass lizard, which we mentioned, and then there's three others, the prairie skink, the prairie race runner, and then the five-line skink. Mm-hmm. And in your part of the state, there could be either the prairie skink, maybe, or five-line skinks could be over there, too.
You might just go online and type in skink, S-K-I-N-K, and then imagine the skink without a tail and see what you think, Ann. Because I think that's the best guess from our experts here. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. But it's like one of those cool things about being, you know, when you get in the out of doors, you got to get out there. And then when you do, you often see some pretty cool things out there, Rory.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, depending on the different, excuse me, types of habitats you're in, you know, you can see a variety of different animals. The amphibians and reptiles, usually have to look a little bit harder to find them. But, you know, if you look hard enough and know the habitats to look for, you can find them. And spring and early summer is a great time to go out and to be able to hear the frogs out as well.
Caller wants to know, how exactly do frogs and we talked a little bit about how snakes hibernate, but how do frogs actually hibernate? What goes on there?
Yeah, the frogs that we have in Wisconsin, there's several different strategies that they use for overwintering. The American toad, which everyone is probably familiar with, it's the only species of toad in Wisconsin. That species actually burrows into the ground and burrows itself low enough to stay below the frost line throughout the winter so that it doesn't freeze. So that species can burrow itself fairly deep. excuse me, some of our larger frogs, the green frog and the bullfrog, the leopard frogs, they need a permanent body of water for the winter, and they'll spend the winter on the bottom of a pond, a deep enough lake. They typically need about 3 feet of water or more. They'll keep themselves kind of burrowed in the muck during the year. And then I think probably our most interesting is some of our tree frogs and the wood frog as well. They have a natural glucose-based kind of natural antifreeze in their body that actually allows them to freeze partially solid in the winter without their cells breaking. So they'll actually overwinter just under the leaf litter in the forest floor, be covered up by snow, and thaw out and go back on their way in the spring.
And lots of scientists have studied that process and what goes on with the chemical reactions.
Yeah, it's a very chemical process, but yeah, it's very interesting, and we have probably about 4 or 5 species that use that technique.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Marty in Spring Prairie, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got a question about Blanding's turtles. I'm in eastern Walworth County, and I used to see some really good-sized Blanding turtles around on the roads here from time to time, and I think the last 10 years I haven't seen any.
Oh, we lost Marty. Comment about Blanding's turtles. Okay, in Spring Prairie area, first, are Blanding's turtles in danger, or are the numbers dropping?
They're actually holding their own fairly well. The species was, until the beginning of this year, was listed as a threatened species in Wisconsin, so it was somewhat rare. We did delist it this year. We felt that the populations were doing well enough, and it's a widespread species throughout the state, and we were seeing enough evidence that the adults were surviving as well as getting to age of reproduction, which is about 12 to 15 years for that species. It takes them a long time to mature and to reproduce for the first time. So, there's definitely threats to turtles that are out there, but Blandings are a generalist species, and they can be found in a lot of areas. Obviously, that's kind of at a, statewide level, but on a local level, there definitely can be impacts to species, and certain populations could be having issues, like the caller had mentioned.
Thanks, Marty, for calling. I'm sorry we lost you on somewhere, bad phone line. Mark in Goose Pond, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Earlier in October, I saw an article in the Middleton Times about a person that was birdwatching by Stricker's Pond and said he was bitten by a rattlesnake, and I was wondering if people from DNR know anything about that. And I was also going to mention that my wife, Sue, and I have been on the frog survey since it started in the early 80s, and we really enjoy it that the DNR has the frog survey to document populations of frogs throughout the state.
Yeah, okay. Well, a couple of good things to talk about there. You guys, I'd be almost sure that you would have heard about somebody apparently bitten by a rattlesnake at Goose Pond area.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Yeah, we have actually heard about the incident that you speak of in Middleton, and we've talked to some folks in the area, and we got a police report about it. Our comments were that basically there's very little chance that it would be a wild rattlesnake. They're not found. They are found in Dane County, but not in that part of Dane County. They're further over by the Wisconsin River. So those were, unless somebody potentially released a captive rattlesnake, we figured that it must be more of either a fox snake or one of our more common snakes that's not venomous.
So the person, obviously the person survived fine and there wasn't any, okay.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe Rory could talk a little bit about the frog and toad survey too.
Yes, I definitely want to talk about that because that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for people to get involved. And as Mark mentioned, a lot of people have been doing this even for decades. The program started in the early 90s. As a way to monitor several different species of frogs that we felt, that biologists felt were declining in the state, and was initiated primarily to keep an eye on those species, but to look at all the different species in Wisconsin, and it's now turned into a 30-plus year program.
That's great.
And we believe it's one of the longest-running volunteer monitoring programs for amphibians in Wisconsin, in North America, the Wisconsin program.
So what happens? How do we get... how do we get involved with that?
Yeah, well, we can. If anyone's interested, they can go to the DNR website and do a search for Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. We have two different types of surveys available to people. One is a little bit new that a lot of people might not have heard of. We have our standard routes, which is probably what Mark's been running, where each volunteer is assigned 10 sites, and they go to those 10 sites three different times a year. We have some frogs that call early season. We call them mid-season breeders and late-season breeders. So we have designated periods in April, May, and June, and then July also to go out and listen. But we've also been, with changes in climatic conditions, we've also been looking at phenology, or the study of when the timing of activities for animals. So we also are encouraging people, especially if they have a pond or lake or stream near their house, wetland, that they pick just one site and go out repeatedly every couple days and just listen for us. And that really will help us look at the beginning and ending of calling each year and compare that from year to year. So there's several different opportunities for people to be involved in the survey now.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool, too. It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. And Mark, you've been doing it for how many years?
We started, I believe, in like 82 or 83 when the program started, I believe, really.
Oh. Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, we have several people that have been doing it for that long. And, you know, that's the kind of data we need for amphibians. Amphibians, as a group, are known to fluctuate quite a bit with the weather. So you really need long-term data on them to look at trends in their populations.
Yeah. Mark, thanks a lot for the question. And, hey, thanks for the volunteering, too. It's much appreciated by everyone, for sure. Thank you again. And Melissa in Stevens Point... Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a question about the impact of atrazine on amphibians. And I'm wondering if our guests could comment on whether or not we've been seeing in the state of Wisconsin, if we've been seeing any of those impacts on amphibian populations.
Okay, who wants to take that one on, Rory?
Yeah, I can take that. Yeah, the caller's correct. There's been a lot of scientific research done over the last even decade, maybe a little bit more, looking at herbicides, in particular atrazine, and the effects that that can have on amphibians, specifically frogs, is what a lot of the studies have been looking at. Definitely from the research that's been done, there is an impact on amphibians, on frogs with atrazine. There aren't any studies I'm aware of in Wisconsin that have specifically looked at that. Some of the primary researchers looking at this have been in California, but it's definitely an herbicide that we, you know, are keeping an eye on and looking at the impacts of that in Wisconsin, if possible.
Mm, okay.
That's where the data that's being collected in the Frog and Toad Survey helps peripherally in that, too, just to monitor the trends of these frogs and make sure that we still have healthy populations.
Very good. Thank you, Melissa, for calling. I appreciate it very much. Going to our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, we had Mona sent a photo and wondered how common are these newts and what areas are they? Would we find them? Also, are Blanding's turtles making a comeback? And we've got a newt there, haven't we?
Yeah. That's one of our aquatic, strictly or primarily aquatic salamanders. And there's also a terrestrial phase of them, too. It looks a little bit different. It's like a red, we call it a red eft. But these guys are fairly common and are found in wetlands and ephemeral ponds, fishless areas. Their favorite prey there, as you can see, is earthworms. So, yeah, they're doing well, and they're very common.
And here's another kind of a cool photo, I think, on our Facebook page from Alex, who says... who's from South Central Racine County, picture of a, is it a toad or is it a frog? This guy lives under our beer fridge out on our deck and has a friend behind one of our outdoor lights, several others nearby that we can hear. This one is pretty tame and we hold it often.
This one looks like a tree frog here. They have those big suction cups
size.
On their toes there, and really good climbers. And they are oftentimes seen under the lights on buildings.
That's pretty cool. We have Kathy emailing us and said, I found a small blue racer snake run over by a vehicle on a back road south of Fifield in northern Price County. That's up there. Is this an unusual sighting for that area?
Well, the racer snakes in general are not one of our most common species. They're somewhat rare in the state. So anywhere that we find them, we would definitely be interested in getting a report of that. They do, unfortunately, get hit on the road sometimes. But it's a fairly rare species in Wisconsin. It typically occupies prairie habitat. And it looks like it gets into Price County just a little bit. But we're always interested in reports of any type of amphibian, even if it's a common species, but particularly the rare ones.
What's the procedure for reporting that?
Yeah, we have an online reporting form on our dnr.wisconsin.gov website, and you can get to that form if you type in the search word biodiversity. That'll take you to our Natural Heritage Conservation Program webpage, and there's a tab for report species that you can click on, and there'll be a rare animal report form that you could submit your observations via that.
Okay, very cool. Or you might also just stop by a local district DNR office.
Yep, that would work too.
And talk to one of the folks there. They'd probably love to hear it.
Yeah, it's important to think about taking photos whenever possible too.
Yeah.
That's really good. It's really easy with herps in most cases too, and that helps a lot verifying the identification.
Let's see. Joan in Green Bay wondered if handling amphibians makes them vulnerable to disease. She said, I've heard that handling them can remove a protective slime layer, exposing them to fungal and viral infections.
I think, a small amount of handling of amphibians won't be an issue. The important thing with handling amphibians is to make sure you wash your hands thoroughly before you hold them. Because they can breathe somewhat through their skin, they're very susceptible to any chemicals that you'd have on your skin. So that could be anything from as innocent as lotion or suntan lotion to bug spray. And I've unfortunately seen people that had bug spray on their hands pick up a frog, and it unfortunately died within a few seconds. But if you have your hands washed and, no chemicals on them, it's holding them for a few seconds shouldn't be an issue for them.
Here's an interesting story from Todd in Delavan. My wife and I live in the country and have a hot tub on our deck. More often than not, when we open the cover, there are tree frogs in there hanging out on the edge. My wife doesn't like them in there, and I will carry them to the tree line 75 yards away, and the next day they'll be back. They even stay in there all winter as we keep the tub heated. My questions are, do they travel those distances across open ground, and what would they eat in the winter?
Yeah. Well, they're going to be hibernating in the winter, as Rory mentioned. So they're not going to be eating anything. And they can migrate a fair distance. Usually, a lot of times in the springtime or in the summertime, we see them migrating during rain events. So whenever they need to have moist conditions for their skin. So the best time for them to migrate is during rains, and they can go a fair distance. As Rory was saying, some of our frogs, leopard frog, can go quite a ways, a couple kilometers. Some of these smaller frogs don't go quite as far, and they have a really great homing device. So if you move a species a fair distance away, they're probably going to come back more than likely.
Let's turn to Ben in Fremont next. Thanks for waiting, Ben. Hi.
Hey, thank you very much. Great show. So I have some acres about 100 yards from the Wolf River marsh, and I have a large pond on my property. And, I mean, we just have frogs out the yin-yang. It's crazy. But so I heard you say that leopard frogs aren't as common, but I swear that's what we have, and just tons of them. Is there a frog that looks similar? And then I had a question on toads. We've got a lot of them. We got a Dusk to Dawn light, and they come out every night, the whole family. They hop across in front of the garage door and sit out there underneath the light for bugs. But do they eat ticks is my question. I read that somewhere, I thought. So, yeah, those are my questions.
All right. Well, Rory, what do you think?
Yeah, the leopard frog, like I had mentioned, it is, you know, on a statewide basis, it is somewhat rare in the state. However, the only species that you could be mistaking that for would be a pickerel frog, which is probably even more rare than the leopard frog. So if you're seeing, you know, brownish, greenish frog with black spots on its back, it's either a leopard frog or a pickerel frog. The pickerel frog has a little bit more squarish spots on its back, but they can be locally common. So, you know, it's very possible that that is what you have, and you just have a nice population of them there. And then for... For the toads, amphibians typically eat based on movement, so they'll eat anything that they see moving. So that'd be any type of invertebrate. I've even seen larger toads actually try to eat smaller frogs if they're in close proximity. So if there was a tick in front of it and it was moving and it had a chance to get it, I could definitely see them eating ticks as well.
Yeah,
the reason I ask, if I could just follow up, so I was kind of, we moved out into the country here, and I was worried about ticks, you know, I had kids and everything. And we haven't seen hide nor hair of ticks, and we got frogs and toads, you know, stacking up like cordwood. So I'm like, something's got to go on. And then we have a pond. There was a lot of dead frogs on the bottom last year. It's fed by two artesian springs, so it doesn't get much ice. I think we only had 18 inches of ice on the whole pond last year, as cold as it was. And a lot of dead frogs in the bottom. I'll hang up and get off the air, but if you could comment on that, that'd be great.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Yeah, we heard a lot about particularly dead turtles and some frogs last year because of the harsh winter. But yeah, you make a good point that an area where there's constant flow, like with a spring area and a constant temperature, that should stay open and shouldn't be as big of a concern. It's more of those areas where in a pond or lake where it could freeze, the water could freeze deeper or completely. That's where we were finding a lot of problems with those species.
I really hope that, here we are running out of time, I really hope that people have a chance to go to our Facebook page, because there are a ton of really interesting photos of different, you know, looking at a Blanding's turtle, and I'm also looking, Mona, at a giant toad house built in her backyard. Which is pretty cool, and there are lots and lots of frog and turtle and salamander and a little of everything. And so I hope you really take the time to go to our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and take a look. And so there, thanks, by the way, a lot for coming. And I guess our reptiles and amphibians are hopefully finding a place to get warm, or at least to settle in.
Yeah, they're going to be, this time of year, they're just starting to, you know, it's starting to get cold, especially in the last couple of days. So they're pretty close to where they're going to be overwintering for the year now.
So they kind of move to that area,
yep,
and get ready to pile in.
Yep.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Rory and Rich, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And hopefully we can do this again. You'll come back?
Oh, definitely. Whenever you want.
And we'll get some more. You know, I thought I could do some snake calls. The rattlesnakes. The garter snake. I'm a real snake caller expert, I'll tell you that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to your next visit. Okay, appreciate thanks. It very much. Well, you know, those reptiles and amphibians, a lot of them hang out in wetlands. And we're going to take a look next at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and what you and I can do to protect our wetlands. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.